It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning gonna keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5, touchdown Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake, Freeman back to throw, under pressure, heaves it downfield, intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15, cuts right back to the 20, looking for a block up to the 30, and drag down there.
Manning takes the snap, back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap. Pass
intercepted as he threw it right, picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or you can check us out on Twitter and join the conversation at hashtag GiantsChat. Good morning, everybody. Hope everyone's having a great Wednesday morning. And a lot of news hitting yesterday based off of what the Giants player said to the media. That's something we can talk about over the course of today's show. We can also discuss the NFL schedule coming out later on tonight. It's been much anticipated. I'm excited about it. We can discuss that as well. And we can also talk about the draft, which obviously is closing in. You know, soon it'll be only about 2 weeks away. And that's a lot of fun as well. We have a couple guests today. Eric Kennedy from Big Blue Interactive will be joining us at 10 o'clock. And just in a couple of minutes, in fact, we're getting up on the line in just a minute here, we'll be joined by Mark Snyder. He covers the Michigan Wolverines for the Detroit Free Press to talk a little bit about Terrell Lewan coming out of Michigan in the NFL draft. So we'll have all that for you. We can call in, talk about the schedule release, give me your predictions. You can have a little fun with this as well. And I think a couple quick items from yesterday before we get to Mark Snyder, who's going to join us to talk about Terrell Lewan here. Number one, Eli Manning looks like he should be 100% for training camp. I wouldn't expect him to do a whole lot at OTAs or in the rest of the offseason program. David Wilson seemed very optimistic. It's just a matter of how those MRIs get back. When he takes them again, there was no timetable on that. So hopefully that, you know, he can get back and be okay. And then finally, Will Beatty, who was very vague on his time frame for returning, but he seemed to indicate that he was on schedule and hopes to be back for the start of the season. So those are the three bits of injury news yesterday that were important. Other stuff came out as well. We could talk about that, and we'll be talking about that in the coming days and weeks. But let's turn our attention to the draft to start the show. And today we are going to be joined by Mark Snyder. He covers the Michigan Wolverines for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, thanks for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
Hey, Mark, well, let's talk about Terrell Lewan. It's really a small draft-eligible Michigan class here, and Terrell Lewan is the one that stands head and shoulders above the rest. We'll talk about the off-the-field stuff in a second. Let's start with him simply as a football player. What did you see from him in his 4 years at Michigan?
He grew into an undisciplined player who had lots of raw talent and built his body up. I mean, when he came, he was 6'7", like he is now, basically. And he was thin, and I mean, he wasn't floppy, you know, but he wasn't in great shape either. And he built himself up, and then he had this instinct, though. He always had that hard edge where he was going to be a mauler, and he just had to kind of build his body to match that. And I think, but he got into, I mean, he came in with all this immense talent, and then as a redshirt freshman, he got into there in like third game or something like that, and he never left the lineup after that.
We are joined by Mark Snyder, covers the Wolverines for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, do you consider him a lockdown, shutdown, put him on your best pass rusher, left tackle that can control that side of the line of scrimmage for your team?
Definitely. He did that for Michigan, and he did it in some unique circumstances, playing with Denard Robinson, who was a very mobile quarterback his first couple years. And then after that, Devin Gardner was a little bit more of a pocket passer, but he also moved around, and that's really tough. You know, to be a left tackle and handle that, you know, to be a conventional left tackle for the NFL and still be able to handle all those guys on the move and not really know where they're going. He allowed, you know, very few sacks, if any, you know, throughout his career, and I think that he can definitely handle that. And he's built himself up. He's become much stronger in the last year or two as well. I mean, as he changed his, and he gained, and he also last summer committed himself to nutrition, and so he's made his body into something that it definitely wasn't early in his career.
So you definitely saw growth in him, and you saw him become a better football player from day one at Michigan to when he graduated?
Oh, no question. Yeah, I think he always had the raw talent, but, you know, you need to be committed to it. And I think that Taylor really, especially the last couple of years, got committed to all the things they were telling him to do. At the beginning, you know, he was young, he's immature, like a lot of players are when they come, especially ones with talent and a gregarious personality like Taylor has. But as he went, you know, he evolved, and he realized he added things different. He changed coaching staffs in the middle, and that meant changing strength coaches as well. But he also embraced the things they were telling him, and it took us some time to do that. And he showed some maturity. He came back for his senior year when he really, if he had gone last year, he probably would have been drafted higher than he will this year.
Joined by Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press, covers the Michigan Wolverines. Well, Mark, obviously the questions about Terrell Lewan really don't focus on the field stuff. His production there, his performance at the combine, everything was phenomenal. People consider him perhaps even a better athlete than Jake Matthews, who's supposed to go ahead of him in this draft. But, and this is a big but, the off-the-field stuff. We know about the charges. What can you tell us about Terrell Lewan off the field? Is this a kid that was in the wrong place at the wrong time, or are there legitimate red flags here that maybe this is not the best kid in the world and NFL teams should be wary of having him around their franchise and their other players?
Well, I don't know. I think that, you know, from what I read, you know, there's a lot of issues in the NFL with a lot of players, and if you got talent, you're going to be in the league. And I think
that is true.
That's an obvious situation here. Giants, you guys know that as well as anyone. But I think that when you look at Taylor, you know, he's a guy who loves life, and he definitely doesn't shy away from putting himself in circumstances. I think in terms of this assault situation, you know, it's still ongoing. You know, the charges were just brought. There was some talk when the first incident was first alleged, you know, that maybe there weren't going to be charges, and now there's three misdemeanor assault charges against him. The kid who's from Columbus, Ohio, this is after the Ohio State game. They were outside of a bar, and he alleges that Taylor hit him. And whether that's true or not, I guess it's going to be for a court to decide. But Taylor's, his arraignment was pushed back. It was going to be, you know, last week, and now it's pushed back till after the draft and after, I guess, what would be a rookie minicamp as well. So I guess we won't know specifics on what the court says until after that.
Does he get along with his teammates, though? Is he a good teammate? Is he a positive locker room presence?
You know, we don't know enough about locker rooms. I mean, he was voted one of the captains, and those are voted by the teammates last year, so I think that that's something. But in terms of the actual locker room itself, we're not in there. We don't get enough access to these guys. It's not even like the NFL.
Right.
Covering Michigan, we get far less than the NFL even, and you think the NFL's restrictive. You know, in Michigan, we talk to guys. We talk to Taylor maybe once a week for about 10 or 15 minutes, and that was about it. So we really don't know enough about that.
What is your feel for Lewan, just as a guy that's talked to him, you know, your opinion of him? Do you think he would be able to make the transition from college to the NFL with his personality, with the way he goes about his business? Do you think it would be smooth for him, or do you think he'd have some issues adjusting to, you know, getting that big paycheck now and, you know, becoming a professional at this level?
No, I think that he stayed, you know, he's an older guy. I mean, he's played 5 years, you know, he basically tapped out all he could do. At Michigan, he lived in Ann Arbor for all this time. He's from Arizona, so he's lived in different areas of the country. He understands moving. And I think that this is something where Taylor on the field is prepared to handle anything that comes to him. And I think that that's something that, you know, he's spent the last couple of years really working on to be prepared for this opportunity, including coming back last year, not just to have another year of college, but to prepare himself for the NFL and being a man and playing in the NFL. In terms of the off-field stuff, I think Taylor, you know, is able to handle the things that come to him. He came from a background where his father's a professional, and I think that, you know, and has a solid job. So I think that he's, you know, he's never wanted for anything necessarily, but Taylor's always been kind of a fun-loving guy around Michigan. He was known for doing all different kinds of things. You know, he rode a moped around, and he rode a two-wheeler bike, you know, a unicycle, I mean, one of those kind of things, you know, around the campus,
right.
Just kind of goofing around and stuff. They had a pig last summer, and that was kind of some of his initiation in their house with a bunch of offensive linemen. So Taylor's a pretty fun-loving guy, and I think that as soon as you meet him, you know, he's a jokester, and you'll see that quickly.
Yeah, I was actually about to ask you about that. I saw your story from this morning about him and a couple other offensive linemen living with a pig in college. Can you kind of get into that and exactly what went down with that old story, Mark?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like Taylor, you know, something Taylor would do. I mean, the way Taylor, you know, we heard about it last summer. He posted some pictures, you know, on Twitter about it. And, you know, at first it looked like a joke, but then, you know, the more we talked to him about it, Taylor was like, yeah, you know, it was the off season, and we just wanted to do something fun, and we weren't hurting anyone, so we thought it'd be kind of goofy. And I think that's kind of as representative of Taylor, you know, as it can be. I mean, when he was young, the few times we talked to him, he would tell us jokes. He was kind of wild. He showed us all his different tattoos. He's actually got an interesting tattoo where he's got on his finger, on his index finger, he's got a mustache tattoo on his index finger, and he held it up and to, you know, take whoever, you know, to be a jokester, you know. And, I mean, that's kind of the guy Taylor is, and he's a goof like that. But as he got older, and the more we talked to him, he just kind of made a conscious decision that when he was in front of us, he wouldn't be the jokester, and he'd be serious, and talk about football, and he'd be focused. And I think that's kind of a, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily what his personality is, but he realized that that's what he needed to be for the team in a public setting and show accountability. I mean, Taylor on the field, you know, he's fiery. You know, that he got into it a couple of years ago with William Golston on Michigan State, and they had pushing matches, and Golston got so mad that whatever Taylor did to aggravate him, you know, he swung at him in a game and got suspended for it. So Taylor's an agitator too, but that's just what he feels he needs to do at that position.
The way you're talking about it, he seems like, it, from talking to him and the way he, you know, just the kind of the goofy stuff that he seems like a pretty good and fun-loving kid that wouldn't cause, you know, trouble day in, day out. Obviously, this off-the-field stuff is something else, but it just doesn't seem like the way you're talking about him, that he's somebody that, you know, is like a quote-unquote negative presence.
Well, yeah, I think he's very intense, you know, when it comes to football. And I think that away from football, he's the opposite of that. He's really loose and goofy and kind of fun-loving in all of our dealings with him. But as I said, you know, the toughest part, you know, talking to you and talking to other people is that we don't know his character enough because we're not around him. It's not really fair of us to assess that. But just in the interactions we've had with him, yeah, he's really loose. You follow his Twitter persona and stuff. He's kind of had a lot of fun, and he goofed around with all of us, and he's definitely a jokester. So I think that's kind of what you're getting. And if you get Taylor, you'll see. If he goes to the Giants or he goes to wherever, that first press conference when he shows up there with those B-writers, they're going to be overwhelmed because there's a lot of Taylor to handle.
Final question from Mark Snyder, covers the Wolverines for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, and I've kind of asked this to all the different reporters I've had on that have covered these kids in college, and I think I know your answer before I ask the question, but I'll ask it anyway. If you had to raise one red flag to an NFL team that's going to draft, you know, Taylor Lewan, and say, you know what, this is something you should legitimately be worried about, what would it be?
Well, I think with Taylor, it's obvious because you can see the off-field issue. I mean, anyone who's got an off-field issue and criminal charges against them, that's something to worry about if you're an NFL team. Obviously, they know more than I do. All I know is the reports and what our paper has talked to the alleged victim, the person making the charges against him. But in terms of what they know, they've been able to ask him about it. With us, he just said it didn't happen, and it's overblown, and it's not something that is portrayed the way it was by the victim, alleged victim, I guess I should say. But we'll have to see what happens, because I think that, you know, if you're an NFL team, you get that opportunity to ask him questions. So they have more information than we do.
Mark, I appreciate the time. Thanks a lot, and best of luck moving forward. We'll talk soon.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. That is Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press. Does a great job covering the Michigan Wolverines. We thank him for joining us this morning, giving us a little insight on Taylor Lewan. And you know what? It's just a matter of whether or not you think that off-the-field stuff is a big enough or a red flag where you say, you know what, we don't want to deal with this, and whether or not you think it's going to be a repeatable offense. You know, it seems to me that it appears to be more of a wrong time, wrong place type of thing. I mean, look, nothing good happens, you know, late at night at bars. We know that. But, you know, punches get thrown for a lot of different reasons at places like that. I'm lucky enough never to be in a situation like that. But, you know, it's hard to really, you know, put a don't draft this kid label on him because of one situation like that. But, again, all these NFL teams going to do due diligence on the kid. He's from a good family, as he mentioned. Seems to be a good kid in the locker room, fun-loving kid that kind of jokes around. Everyone seems to like him. So I think those are all interesting items there on Taylor Lewan. 201-939-4513. Eric Kennedy will be joining us around 10 o'clock in around 15 minutes. So until then, we will take your calls at 201-939-4513. We can talk about the draft. We can talk about the schedule release tonight. If you want, you guys can give me some predictions on who you think the opening day's game is going to be. If you want to give me Sunday night, or final game of the year. You can even give me who the Thursday night game is going to be over the course of the year. So anything like that we can talk about here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And any of the news that broke yesterday from the Giants press conferences and the players talking to the media, we'll discuss that moving forward as well. Let's go to the phones. Mike in Virginia has been holding the longest. Mike, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Mike. What's going on?
Oh, I was listening to what you guys were saying about Taylor Lewan, and I think, for me, like, I think the fact that he's being aggressive is a good thing. Like, I don't want a guy with attitude on the offensive line. If he's punching people in their neck, then that's good for him, man. He'll be a hitting football player.
Honestly, he seems like look, taking the assault out of the mix here, and I know it's hard to do that, just based on his personality and his physical ability and his aggression, he seems like a pretty, you know, good prototypical offensive lineman that would fit in here based on what his personality is like. He's intense on the field, kind of a jokester off the field, good physical specimen. It seems like he would be a fit, again, pending what you think about this off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, I've seen some rankings online about some had Lewan higher than Matthews. What do you think about that?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure I would go that far, only because I think Matthews has far fewer questions than Taylor Lewan. I mean, he doesn't have any of those off-the-field issues. And he basically,
as far as upside, though.
Yes, I was about to get to that. I do think physically, Lewan is probably a better specimen than Matthews is. He did better in the all the workouts, the combines, in terms of the broad jump and the vertical jump and all that sort of stuff. So, he might have more upside than Jake Matthews. That might be the truth.
Excellent. I mean, my fault to us. It seems like that the assault thing might play to our favor if he ends up falling because of it.
I'm sorry, say that again, Mike. I missed the end of that sentence there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying the assault might play to our favor if he ends up falling because of it.
No, you're right. And if that pushes him down the draft board and makes him available with the Giants and you can get the same value you would get with either Matthews or Robinson at 12, that's obviously a good thing.
Right. One more thing. I was talking to Paul a couple days ago. I believe he was on Monday, I think. But we were talking about Walter Thurman, and I saw this obscure stat where it said that he spent 70% of his coverage career in the slot. And in that time, he allowed zero touchdowns and 0.9 yards, I believe.
This is Walter Thurman you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you seen any of those stats? I've seen, every time I bring that up, but nobody knows what I'm talking about. I read that online somewhere.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus, I don't know about his career stats. I know last year, according to Pro Football Focus, he had some of the best numbers. I'm trying to remember if it was yardage allowed or percentage of balls caught, but he had some of the best numbers of all slot cornerbacks last year when he played for the Seahawks. Now, how much is that him? How much is that the Seahawks system? I think it's a fair question to ask. We'll find out. I talked to Walter for the first time yesterday. He seems like a really fun-loving guy. No lack of confidence. Calling this secondary group, potentially the best in the league, comparing it to Seattle's group last year. So, look, I think Thurman was a good pickup, especially on a one-year deal with the amount of money they gave him. I think he's, in a situation where he wants to play well and then cash in next year with a big money contract. I think that was one of those under the radar, excellent signings by the Giants.
Absolutely. I want to catch you one more thing.
Yeah, real quick, Mike.
I was kind of sad when I saw a thing about Will Hill. After failing another drug test, he didn't kill anybody though, and he's not a real criminal. He's not a felon or anything. So I think we just let him wait the out of suspension and bring him up. That guy is an incredible player, and if we release him, somebody's gonna pick him up right away.
Here's the problem though, the more chances you give a guy, how can you really depend on him if he keeps making these same mistakes? So those are the two sides of the issue that the Giants are going to weigh. No one knows, again, if this Will Hill news, in fact, does come down and nothing's official. The Giants haven't released a statement on it, anything like that. So really it's just speculation right now. But, if this does, in fact, end up being true, and, the Giants will weigh that. They'll decide whether or not it's worth it keeping him around, taking the chance that he can make another mistake like this again, or are they better off cutting bait and just going with Stevie Brown and trying to develop a guy like Cooper Taylor?
True. We still have a good situation no matter what, but thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call, man. 201-939-4513. AJ's in South Carolina. AJ, what's going on?
Good morning, John. I got two questions for you.
Sure.
Taylor Lewan, do you think he might be gone with the Giants pick.
You know, I know a lot of people think Lawan's going to be gone in the top 12, and I do think that's a distinct possibility. Here's my thing. There are four players to me that are going to be the best players available for the Giants at 12. You have, well, I'm going to take Mike Evans out of the mix, so I'm down to three. It's either going to be Donald, Lawan, or Ebron. To me, those are the three guys that are going to be the guys that could be there at 12 and be the most talented. I think odds are one of those three will be there. Which one of the three? I don't have the answer to that question, but I'd be shocked if all three of those guys are off the board before 12. If they are, that means maybe only one quarterback got taken in the first 12 picks. So I think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on, who, in fact, will still be left on the board when the Giants go at 12.
My second question is real big. Do you think he might have some competition between Charles Brown and him and John Jerry?
I mean, I think Will Beatty, it's his job to lose. We got to see how quickly he can get on the practice field coming back from this injury. I think that's a big issue. Look, Charles Brown, you know, remember, he got benched last year for a rookie second-round pick in, you know, I'm trying to think of the damn kid's name out of Florida State. That got Teron Armstead, that got picked in the second round out of Florida State. So I don't think he's a guy the Giants look to be an every-down starter at left tackle, considering he got benched last year in New Orleans. And I think John Jerry is more of a guard than a tackle, and he's more depth than anything else. So, to me, this is Will Beatty's job, but there's obviously a lot of risk there based on his level of play last year, number one, and number two, because of his injury. So that's why drafting a guy like Lawan would make sense to not only improve your offensive line, but give you some protection in case Will Beatty doesn't come back and play well.
I got one quick question for you.
Yeah.
What's my other left tackle available in the draft?
There's a lot of left tackles in this draft, man. It's a very deep class. I mean, once you get past those top three, Jake Matthews, Greg Robinson, and, of course, Terrell Lawan, you got the Zach Martins of the world, though some people project him to eventually be a guard or a right tackle. Morgan Moses, the kid out of Virginia, is another guy that's probably going to be a first-round pick. He's more of your traditional left tackle, so he's a guy, if the Giants love him at the left tackle spot, could theoretically pick him at 12, though I think that's a little bit early. And then you got a bunch of guys in the second round, too, that you have the Cyrus Quangio kid out of Alabama, that if he can get over his injuries, he's 6'7", 330. He has all the tools to be a good left tackle. So there are a lot of guys in this draft that can't play that position.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, AJ. Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. We'll be joined by Eric Kennedy from BBI in about 5 to 6 minutes. In the meantime, let's stick on the phones and go to Drew in Virginia next. Drew, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, John.
What's up, Drew? How you doing, bro?
Great. Hey, question, just on the caller before this guy came in, the other caller.
Yeah, Mike.
My question is this. What good is Will Hill if he can't stay on the field due to suspension?
Right. Well, and that's the thing. And can you go into any season now saying, look, we're good at safety. Do you know why? We have Ancharo and Will Hill. I mean, can you ever really say that considering his, frankly, unreliability from year to year and be able to keep his nose clean?
That's exactly my point. At any rate, man, my question is different, and it's kind of switch gear. Actually, it's a question about Eli and the offense, and I'm going to take your answer off the air. But, you know, my question is this, okay? You know, I don't expect Eli to have another 2013 season, okay? You know, that was brutal, and, you know, that was a lot of things to cause that. The question is this, okay, what if Eli actually does have a bad season again?
Describe bad, Drew.
Let's say he struggles a little bit as well as the offense line, meaning that, okay, bottom line is this, we're getting a new offense, we're going to have a new offense, we're going to have some new players on the field, and we got that whole learning curve thing all over again, so... You know, while I don't expect a 2013 season, I'm not going to sit up here and say, oh, we're going to run the table and, you know, go to the Super Bowl this first year. I don't know that that's going to happen.
Well, Joy, I think my question for you, if we want to play this, you know, theoretical game here, are we talking another 27 interception season, or are we talking more of like a, you know, 24 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, 3,500 yards type of season? What are you talking about?
Probably I'll go with your stats.
Okay.
Okay. Something like that. Although, you know, that's probably a little high on the touchdowns, but probably something like that. Okay. You know, my general statement is if Eli and his offense, I should say, struggles again.
Okay.
You know, and assuming that that's going to affect negotiations, where does Eli stand in the organization? I suspect he still has some carte blanche. You know, I don't think I feel like the Giants are not going to get rid of Eli, but if he has another bad season, that's going to affect his negotiations.
Well, I think Eli Manning has the utmost respect of everybody in the organization. Drew, they see how he works. They see his work ethic. They like him as a person. They think he's a great representative of the organization off the field. They wouldn't just cut him because, quite frankly, they'd have to pay him $20 million not to play football next year. So he would be around for at least the last year of his contract. I'm not sure if I would use the word carte blanche because that means he could do whatever he wants and not lose his job, but I do believe they are still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But if he does play as poorly this year as he did last year, that'll be, you know, 5 out of 6 years not making the playoffs. That'll be another season where Eli has not played his best football. That's 3 out of the last 6 years where he's played legitimately poorly, and I think that's a real worry for the Giants, and it will really affect his negotiation position and how much money the Giants are willing to give him, and frankly, how much money any team would be willing to give him.
Yeah, okay, I get that. I guess my point is, and like I said, I kind of like your stats a little bit better, and that's kind of, I mean, again, like I said, I don't see a 2013 season, but I guess, the other thing is just that I'm looking at, again, we got this new offensive line that's going, I mean, it's this new offense that's going to be coming in, and, I tend to be a realist. And of course, you always hope your team wins, but again, this first year, I kind of foresee some struggles.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Drew.
Thanks, man.
Be good, man. 201-939-4513. We'll take one more call before we get Eric Kennedy from BBI. We'll get him on the line in just a second. Shakes is in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Shakes, sounds like you just crawled out of bread, dude. You're doing all right?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm just a little flustered here with the whole offensive line thing because now I'm kind of – my spidey senses is tingling.
Why is that?
Because now I'm kind of worried about Beatty. Like, really, like, questioning it. Like, you know me. Like, I've been saying this for months now. I don't want a tackle. But now it's like, well, Beatty not going to be healthy, then, ooh, that is something to think about. It really is something to think about. And when I heard, I didn't listen to all the videos or I didn't watch all the videos yet, but what stuck out to me was Snead was saying that he's trying to get a grasp of the new offense. So if he's trying to get a grasp of the new offense, then a lot of things must change. A lot. So now, I don't know. My whole thinking is kind of doing a whole 360 here, John. I don't know. I don't know what to expect now from my Giants. I don't even know because if Snead's sitting here and he's the coach's son-in-law and he's sitting here saying, well, I'm trying to get a grasp of the new offense myself, then, yeah, a lot has changed.
Well, guys, remember, we've only had 2 days of meetings here. I mean, these guys have literally been in two offensive meetings, and I guarantee the first one is kind of like the first day of school where you don't actually learn anything, and everyone basically just says hello to each other. And from what most people have told, and most people said yesterday, Shakes, they focus mostly on the running game the first couple of days, not even on the passing game. So I think anything anybody said yesterday regarding the offense is probably a little bit premature. Let's see them do a little bit more before we start determining exactly what this offense is going to look like.
Okay, cool. Because that had me a little, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. So maybe what everybody else was saying about the tight end, we don't know how our offense is going to be. You know, maybe we won't have to rely on a tight end to block like that. But I like that smash mouth football, you know, run that ball. you know, play hard-nosed defense. That's Giants football to me. I just hope they don't change that. We change into something like the Saints. I don't want to be like that.
No, look, the Shakes, there's going to be a balanced offense here as long as Tom Coughlin is here. They will run the football. Don't worry about that. They will run the football. There will be balance. All I'm saying is that, look, I know Victor Cruz and Eli both talked a lot about, you know, especially Victor talked yesterday about this being a, you know, a West Coast offense, that type of routes that they're running and everything. That's just based off what him and Eli did in individual workouts at Duke. That has very little to do with what they're actually doing here in the building for the last 2 days. So, again, I'd be a little bit patient here. I know people don't want to be patient. They're trying to fish for information as much as they can. But, you know, Everyone that you know was basically asked a question about the offense yesterday said, look, we're just getting started. We really don't know a whole lot yet.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that's good. Yeah. You calmed me down a little bit, John. Thanks.
No problem.
All right, man. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks. Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. We'll get back to your calls in just a second. But for now, we're going to be joined by Eric Kennedy. He runs BigBlueInteractive.com. Eric, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you, you know, bumping back a couple of days this week. Thanks for your patience, and how's everything going today?
Good. Everyone was very excited to see the Giants for all 17 or 18 people to talk to the press yesterday, but that vibe kind of got ruined by the Will Hill thing, so that was the bulk of the discussion yesterday, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's start with the Will Hill stuff first before we talk about everything the players talked about yesterday, because I think a lot of the stuff from yesterday was pretty interesting. Number one on Will Hill, what's the feeling here? Do people still want to give him another? Again, we don't get this. This isn't official. The NFL hasn't announced anything.
Right.
The Giants haven't announced anything, so this is all speculation, but if something does come down, what's the general feeling here? The Giant fans want the Giants to cut bait. Do they want them to give them another chance? What are people thinking?
Well, they're very disappointed because there's two things. One, they recognize what a great talent this young man has, and you know, even the 12 games that he played last year, there was a recognition on the part that, you know, John Beeson made a big difference to this defense, but there was also seemed to be a correlation between Will Hill playing a bigger role in the defense, and he certainly, you know, he can hit. He has great range. He seems to have a nose for the football. He's a great athlete. But, you know, the gut feeling is, you know, I'm going to be very direct here, what a dummy. How could it, you know, again, we don't know the details, but the assumption right now is, on the part of the fan, the average fan, is what they're being told in the press is probably accurate. That we don't know if it's a performance enhancing substance or it's an illegal substance. But again, the attitude is this guy knew he was under the spotlight. He was going to get tested again. How could he let this happen again? Again, we don't have the details, but assuming the worst here. So the thought is if he can't control himself, they're going to have to cut bait on this guy because it's only going to be a matter of time before this happens again. I think what most people are hoping is that there is some sort of extenuating circumstance here again, you know, maybe some piece of paperwork that wasn't filed again, maybe like the Adderall issue or something like that. But everyone's kind of assuming the worst, and you know, they're pretty down about it because he was one of the people that folks were looking at this new secondary that he was going to be a big factor in that, even with Stevie Brown coming back being re-signed.
Yeah, 100%. Now, going back to what was talked about yesterday, obviously there was a lot of questions about the Will Hill situation, and, you know, these players don't know what to say to a question like that. You know, they don't have any involvement in that sort of, you know, bigger team issues type of thing. But in terms of the offense, and I think that was one of the big things that a lot of questions were asked about yesterday, and Victor Cruz really, more so than anybody, kind of referenced this as a really more of a West Coast system. He gave the most details. But for the most part, the other players really said, guys, look, we've been in meetings for 2 days. We're doing mostly run blocking and you know, run schemes right now. We really don't know what this offense is quite yet. But I think a lot of people are drawing a lot of conclusions, probably too quickly, based off of a couple small quotes from Victor Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the nature of being a fan. You know, we're all very, and I heard you talk to the person that was on just before me. We're all very impatient, and we're all curious, and every little snippet of information is going to be analyzed and overanalyzed. And I try to caution people on the website again that a lot of the offensive problems that they had last year just they were not all due to Kevin Gilbride. I mean, I know that's not popular right now, but everyone wants to blame Kevin Gilbride. I made the point that back in 2011 when the Giants were playing the 49ers in the playoff game and they had mic'd up Carlos Rogers, and he was saying, I can't cover these option routes. They're driving me crazy. I can't cover them. Everybody on the site was like, man, I love our offense. They can't deal with it. Now everyone's saying they want to get rid of the option routes. And it's one of the coaches on our site, one of the individuals that coaches high school football, he said, every NFL team has option routes, and the Giants are going to continue to have option routes.
Uh-huh.
So that's the kind of thing that, you know, fans, a lot of times they want to pick one little thing that's the reason for the Giants' failures. And you can't just all dump it on Kevin Gilbride. And that bugs me, but he's the popular scapegoat right now, and everyone says he's the root of all evil. I'm not saying there was, you know, having a new offensive coordinator and a new scheme's not going to help, and we're all excited about that. But I keep saying you got to block. You got to have guys that can catch the football. You got to have somebody throw the football accurately. You got to be able to run the football. And these were all problems last year for the Giants. They were always in third and long because they couldn't block. They had one receiver that was dangerous, that was Victor Cruz, and teams were doubling him, and we couldn't run the football. So it was very easy to defend the Giants last year. And you and I have talked before, they've got to rebuild the talent around Eli again in order for the offense to work well, because Ben McAdoo is not going to be able to do much if he doesn't have a good football player. So that's what I hope, you know, fans realize, that they go hand in hand. Scheme and personnel go hand in hand.
Yeah, I want to get back to a second from what you're talking about at Kevin Gilbride. And I agree. I've cautioned people the same way over the past, you know, few months about thinking that, you know, his offense was the problem, forgetting that his offense was a top 10 offense for a good part of his career here and a top 5 offense for some years too. But in terms of those option routes, and I was going to make this point that I haven't gotten to it yet, you know, Victor Cruz didn't say they were going to run different routes. They were no longer going to run different routes based on coverage. All he said is that it won't be a situation where Eli has to read body language. That doesn't mean that against a zone, a receiver might run a certain route. Against a cover three, they might run a different route. Against man-to-man, they might run a different route on the same play. Those are simple option routes. The Packers all day ran back shoulder catches. If you watch the Packers play, they used to run back shoulder catches to Jordy Nelson, to Greg Jennings. And you know what a back shoulder catch is? A back shoulder catch is an option route. You see how the guy's covering you. Rather than going over the top, you throw it to the back shoulder. So there's still going to be reads here between the quarterback and the receiver in this offense, and they're going to have to communicate. It's not going to be a situation where it's, well, this is your route, no matter what, you're going to run it. Maybe it's going to be like that a little bit more often, but there's still going to be a lot of seeing what the defense is doing and then running the route based on that coverage.
Right, and if the Giants don't do that, they'd be in trouble.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because you every team has pre-snap and post-snap reads, and the quarterback and the wide receivers and the tight ends have to be on the same page. And if they just ran the route without looking at the coverage and adjusting to the coverage, then they'd be incredibly easy to defend, and we would not. We'd probably have a bottom 10 offense. So that's just the one thing I just hope fans recognize is, we got Victor Cruz. They're trying to rebuild the offensive line. Hopefully, Reuben Randall steps it up. Hopefully, Jarrell Jernigan steps it up, and they get some people in the draft. But they've got to get better players to go hand in hand with the new scheme. Now, that all said, you know, everyone's excited. You get, you know, the players talked about it yesterday. Ben McAdoo brings a new energy to the offense. There's new excitement because they have to learn it, and that in itself is exciting the players. But it was interesting, too, what you mentioned, is that they've only been exposed to it for a couple of days. I think a couple of guys said that they've only been really given really the run game information. And then you got conflicting information a little bit. Cruz said, you know, he talked about he seemed to suggest that they've seen some more of the passing offense. But Reuben Randall said he hadn't noticed any changes yet. So, again, it's day two, and you know, I don't think the players really know what's going to go on, what this is going to look like.
Eric, 100%. And sorry for interrupting you. I apologize, but you know, and then you have these players say, "Yeah, this looks a lot like the Packers offense, a lot like a West Coast offense." These guys have never played in the Packers offense. They've never played a West Coast offense. How the hell do they know what it even looks like?
Right. So I think there's probably, but there again. they're thrown in front of a bunch of reporters, they're asked these questions, and they're thinking off the top of their head, and they may be relaying
right.
accurate information, or they just may be, you know, trying to say something to appease the reporters. So we'll find out. And I hope when they do know a lot, they don't tell the reporters too much, because I'd like the Giants to surprise some teams with some new stuff this year. So I hope – I mean, and that's frustrating, too, and sometimes on fans, because we always want to know what's going to happen, but it's – smart move for teams sometimes to sort of hide some of this stuff and hide some of it in the preseason and surprise teams with it throughout the season on opening day and so forth as they progress through the year. So I hope that they are a little bit guarded with this information too.
We're joined by Eric Kennedy from Big Blue Interactive. And Eric, I think you make a really good point. And the sad thing about it, I'm not even sure we're going to see this full offense in these preseason games, because I think that the Giants, just like you said, are going to want to wait to unveil exactly what they're going to do for that first regular season game. And, you know, a lot of times that a team either gets a new defensive coordinator or an offensive coordinator, they have a good advantage for the first 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8 games of the season as other teams are trying to figure out exactly what's in their playbook and what they do. And I think, you know, that first half of the season should provide the Giants offense with some measure of an advantage, because there'll be no game tape on what the Giants' new offense is actually going to look like with this personnel.
Exactly. If I'm a Giants opponent, I don't want to play the Giants early this year.
No.
Though that said, you know, there's a downside to it, because the Giants won't be completely comfortable with it themselves either. But I think that the unknown scares teams a lot. I know that in the past when the Giants have played a new team, say, even, you know, Chip Kelly with the Eagles, you weren't really sure what they were going to do when the season started. You were kind of like, well, I'd like to see a little bit more of this game tape first before we start playing those guys. I think the biggest challenge that Tom Coughlin faces this year, and this is probably the closest example that he has experienced, was his expansion year in Jacksonville, was how does he assimilate all of these new faces into the what you would call the New York Giants culture, or the Tom Coughlin culture. I'm in the middle of his book that he just came out, which talks about the New York Giants culture, and, you know, it really explains why all these rules are in place and what they're trying to do. And I think it's going to be interesting to see the you know, we have 15 or 16 new veteran free agents in here. You're going to have the draft picks, the rookie free agents. You're probably going to have literally half the team being brand new. And so many of the old guys that were there, that were the faces of the team, are gone now. I think his biggest challenge really in the early stages is to try to get people to buy into the program. And you've had guys in the past that completely bought into the program, like Michael Strahan and Antrell Roll, but it took them a year to do so, or a year and a half to do so when they first started playing under Tom. You know, they didn't like playing for him, but
right.
Now, you know, now they love the guy, you know, but they've got to get to that point again. And I think that's going to be the most interesting thing with Tom Coughlin. Does he sort of crack the whip a little bit more than he has in recent years in order to sort of reinsert himself and let them know the way he does things? Because he was able to pull back a little bit with his team because they knew what was expected from them. Or does he not have to do that because people like Antrell Roll now and Eli Manning and Victor Cruz will bring the other guys up to speed? I'm not really sure how that dynamic's going to work, but I think that's going to be very interesting, because I'm sure some of the people they brought in are going to have some issues with the way things are done in New York Giants way. That's what I think that's going to be the fascinating early story.
Yeah, no question about it. Anything else? Final question for Eric Kennedy from Big Blue Interactive, Eric, that jumped out from you yesterday based on what some of the guys said to the media.
I think the one that caught everyone's attention was JPP dropping down to 270 pounds. I think that's good for him, good for his back, good for, you know, the type of game he plays. So I think, you know, even Tom Coughlin in the past has mentioned he's been a little bit overweight, so I think the fact that he's actually dropped 15 pounds, and on the video he looked great.
He
so
did.
I think that was that's one thing that stood out too.
Yeah, I agree, Eric, 100%. And you know, if he's getting his weight down, maybe get some of that explosiveness back that he was certainly lacking the last couple of seasons. Eric, appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next week. All right, bud.
Great, thanks.
Thank you, man. Great job by Eric Kennedy, as always, from Big Blue Interactive. Does a fantastic job. You can also go, obviously go there and join in on the message boards, chat away with Giant fans who love to talk about Big Blue. 201-939-4513. I will take calls the rest of the way. I'll give you my mock schedule that I kind of put together yesterday. I'll have a little fun with that. Let's start off and go with Nugs in Minnesota. Nugs, thanks for holding, buddy. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Big Johnny?
Nothing much, Nugs. What's up with you?
None. Y'all kind of stole my thunder with what I was going to say.
That's all right. What do you got?
Well, first of all, I just think all of Giant Nation needs to replay Mr. Mara saying the offense is broken. I mean, this is you can have a top 10 defense, a number one defense that's only giving up 7-10 points a game. But if you're not scoring more than 10 points a game, guess what? You're 0-16. You know what I'm saying?
No, Nugs, you're 100% right. And another thing on top of that, you know, people are all excited. Oh, it's going to be like the West Coast offense. People act like the West Coast offense is some kind of magical, you know, phenomenon here that never, ever fails. Trust me, there's been a lot of West Coast offenses installed around the league. If your players aren't good enough, the West Coast offense ain't going to work.
True.
You need players.
And so I think that the advantage that we do have, piggybacking on what you just said, was that there's not going to be game tape. It wasn't the fact that Kevin Gilbride's offense sucked all of a sudden. It was the fact that, remember, Kevin Gilbride was with the Houston Oilers. He was implementing that running shoot with Warren Moon and all of them back then. He got punched in the face by Buddy Ryan. You know what I'm saying?
Kevin Gilbride's been doing this for a long, long time.
Exactly. That's how long his offense has been in the league, and that's how many years of game tape they had on him. And for his offense to consistently be a top 10 offense was kudos to him. You know what I'm saying? I think we got a little bit stubborn in our ways, but then I think that Kevin Gilbride basically took the blame for Will Beatty for our offensive line sucking. Like, if Ebron's not there, I'm all about going for offensive tackle. You know what I'm saying? I'm all about that, getting somebody who can maybe and just piggybacking on what I've, because I've been listening, Will Beatty's probably not an offensive tackle in this league. He probably needs to be competing with Brewer for guard. I wouldn't mind if Ebron was gone, we go number one at 12 with another offensive tackle. So now we got Pugh on one side, he's a first round pick. We got whoever we draft this year, he'll be a first round pick, and those will be our bookend tackles that Eli.
Well, quite honestly, Nugs, here's the only issue with that. I'm not sure Will Beatty has the strength and upper body power to, you know, play guard in this league and move people off the ball.
Well, it's tight on Will Beatty, man, because I understand we've already committed to him money wise. I understand that it's really still his job to lose. I'm not sure how comfortable I am with that being the situation, but I understand that that's what the situation is. You know what I'm saying? But I really don't see him holding up through the whole season. I really don't see Snead holding up through the whole season. And at some point, we're going to have to address that tackle guard combo, get younger on our line. And maybe we'll get lucky and he will turn back into the Will Beatty from 2-3 years ago that got the contract, and Eli will be cool. And watch, when Eli's got 3 to 4 seconds in the pocket to read a defense, he's one of the deadliest and best quarterbacks in the league. I still stick by that. But what I've been doing, you know, because, you know, we've been talking about the draft ad nauseum, and it's just going to play out how it plays out. I've been looking at our schedule.
All right, what do you got for me?
I've really got us going, and you're going to say this is optimistic, but I see us going 11-5. I see us going 11-5.
Where do you see the losses coming from?
I see the losses coming at home from Dallas, the Skins, and the 49ers. And I mean, from the Eagles, the Skins, and the 49ers, with an asterisk by the 49ers, because we kind of own them. So that could be a game that we mess around and get that. And then away, I see us losing to the Lions and the Seahawks. And then and then in the division, I got us going 4-2. I have a sweep in Dallas, and then splitting with the Skins and the Eagles. I think this is going to be one of those weird years where they come and beat us at home, then we come and beat them at home, or vice versa. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to see what you had to say about that or whatever. But
I would think 11-5 is a little optimistic. I mean, you know, you're assuming they're going to sweep all four teams in the AFC South, and considering, you know, Indy's a very good team out of that division, you know, that's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, but I don't see the Colts. I mean, the Colts are cool, but now I think that they got Hakeem Nicks, man. he's not going to get no separation there either.
But they also have Reggie Wayne coming back. They have T.Y. Hilton as a good player. They got Andrew Luck, who's an excellent quarterback. That's going to be
a tough game. He's coming back off of ACL at like 105 years old.
Still going to be a tough game. I think Atlanta's going to have a very good bounce back year. That's not going to be an easy game. The Rams were an excellent team last year with a very good defensive line. Depending on what they do with their two first-round picks this year, at St. Louis could be a tough game. Not to mention Arizona, who finished with 10 wins last year, has one of the best defenses in the league. Don't forget about them either. That's also going to be a tough game.
But what I'm counting on is that there's no game tape on our offense. There's no game tape on our offense. If everybody's healthy and comes to play, and we can keep Eli upright, there's no game tape on our offense. It's not like they can go back and see, okay, well, for the last two, three years they've been doing this. Maybe you'll throw a new wrinkle in there, but the whole offense is a new wrinkle.
No, I agree.
I think the fact that the NFL won't have enough time to adjust means that we're probably going to start off 5-0. That's just how I feel. We started off last year 0-6. I don't see Coughlin coming in with that good old boy mentality. I think he's going to go back to the you better be 10 minutes early Coughlin. That dude, you know what I'm saying, playing with a lot more discipline. And then our defense was already cool. And with the Will Hill thing, I mean, we got Stevie Brown coming back. This dude's a distraction. I mean, true that, Will Hill's got oodles and oodles and oodles of talent, but he's a distraction.
All right, Nugs.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if he can't stop doing what he's doing to make the team, to be on the team, then he needs to go. You know what I'm saying? But if Stevie Brown comes back and our offensive line can stay relatively healthy, I see us going 11-5. So
I appreciate the call, Nugs.
I'll just take your – okay, thanks. Bye.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. I think 11-5 is a little optimistic right now. Let's see what they do on offense to get this offense fixed. Remember, just because, you know, they don't have things on tape, doesn't mean the offense is going to be good right away. You know, Tony Allen on Twitter pointed out, well, that's one of the reasons the Eagles had success last year. Sure. But keep this in mind. How much success did the Eagles have with Michael Vick as their quarterback early in the year when there was really no game tape on Philly? Not so much. Had a lot more success later in the year with more game tape with Nick Foles. You know why? Nick Foles is a better player. Better player. Now, at Night Moves NJ makes a good point that, you know, with so much turnover in the NFL and different players every year, Kevin Gilbride's offense was harder to pick up, so maybe it'll be a quicker learning curve with the new system. I think that's a possibility. I won't argue that. 201-939-4513. Mike is down in Alabama. Mike, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, John? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, Mike. What do you got for me?
Well, I got a couple things. First of all, I just want to throw a little love out there to Kevin Gilbride, man. I tell you, when it came to February 3rd, 2008, I waited 17 years for that night, so we got to give him a little love for everything that we've done, so I just want to give him a little appreciation there.
Yeah, Mike, no doubt about it, and also the second Super Bowl in 2011, that really was an offense Super Bowl. I mean, that was a high-powered, explosive offense that could move the ball up and down the field, make big plays, and, you know, Kevin Gilbride was one of the most consistently good offensive coordinators in his years with the Giants here. I mean, the Giants offense was a top 10 offense year in, year out, and they were extremely consistent.
Oh, absolutely. And when you think about it, if you can't block, tackle, throw, punt, pass in this league, you know, you don't have the fundamentals, there's not much you're going to do. You can't really blame everything on scheme. But, you know, at the same time, you know, maybe it's a good thing we move in a new direction and, you know, throw a little spark in there. So, anyway, the couple things I really wanted to talk about. First of all was our first-round draft pick. I really am high on Eric Ebron. Watched a little bit of film on this guy, a little bit of the All-22 and some of the plays he made at North Carolina. And I can, you know, see him just the speed. I mean, he ran a 4.6. You know, a guy weighs like 260 pounds. I mean, the guy's an absolute freak. So I think if Detroit doesn't take him, at, what, 10, I believe? Because I've been hearing a lot that Detroit really wants this guy, but if he's there, man, I don't see how they can pass. You know, you've got a guy that's explosive, and it just seems like he has those raw, natural abilities that you just can't coach. You know, just the plays down the field, you know, he's not afraid to go up the middle on the seam and see him on those screen routes. Look, I mean, the guy's got great speed and ability, so I really think that would be something that would really develop well in that new offense. You think about JerMichael Finley in Green Bay, and I think having that big explosive play guy would definitely help there. So I was just wondering what you thought about Ebron. I don't know if you guys talked about it before. I wasn't listening earlier, but
hey, look, Mike, I'm an Ebron guy. I think he'd be a great pick for the Giants at 12 if he's there. You know, I think there's a decent chance he's not on the board. The Bills might take him at 9. A couple other teams might be in the mix for him as well. But I think he would provide a very, very effective weapon down the middle of the field that would help open up the offense for Victor Cruz a little bit. I think you can teach the guy how to block. You know, maybe it'll be rough the first year, but by year two he'd be okay and have the explosive ability that he has as a pass receiver. I believe when all is said and done, Ebron will be a better receiver than Vernon Davis is. You know, his overall upside is, you know, the Jimmy Graham type of stratosphere, and maybe he can block a little bit too, you know, while Jimmy Graham doesn't block anybody. So I think Ebron at 12 would be good value. I think he'd help the team right away, and I think he'd fill a need.
Right. Okay, and then the last thing I really wanted to bring up was David Wilson injury. I was on my Twitter news feed this morning. I follow all you guys up there, man. You guys put out some good stuff, by the way. But I guess he had his fusion surgery, in January, this January, I believe.
This is David Wilson you're talking about?
Yeah, David
yes,
Wilson.
Correct.
Okay, and he injured last October. Well, I just thought about that because I actually personally have had that surgery. I actually had spinal fusion in my neck. I was active duty military, combat arms, you know. I pretty physical job and all that sort of thing. So I kind of have a little personal experience from that. And I'll tell you, I'm not a doctor or anything, but to say that's three and a half months or maybe 4 months, that's a ridiculously fast timeline as far as recovery from that injury. My doctor, my neurosurgeon person was telling me at least 1 year to be cleared for any sort of contact. And you think Peyton Manning had that surgery, he missed an entire season, and, you know, he's not playing the running back position. And him coming in there, I mean, basically what they do, you know, is they cut you open from the front of your neck and they clean out all the bad, you know, discs, the herniated disc, and they do a bone graft. So even if, you know, you're thinking about muscle or tissue healing faster on a younger guy or whatever the case may be, I mean, a bone graft, I mean, it's going to take time for that bone to fuse. So I think it's a little optimistic to think that he could be cleared for OTAs and that sort of thing. And I know we got Rashad Jennings, but I just wonder, you know, the depth at the running back position, and I don't think that's a guy that we're really going to be able to count on, because that's a very, you know, quick timeline as far as fusion surgery is concerned, and I wonder if you think that's something they'll address later in the draft.
No, Mike, I agree 100%, and thank you for your service, by the way, and I agree. I think that's David Wilson taking that player's mentality where, you know, I don't feel any pain, I feel good, I think I'm good to go. But you're right. You know, the actual bone has to heal. The actual fusion has to take place. And until the MRI and the X-ray show that, they're not going to let him on the field. And they shouldn't let him on the field. And that's why anytime, you know, Tom Coughlin or Jerry Reese has been asked about, you know, David Wilson over the past few months, it's been like, look, we hope he gets back. But honestly, I would not be surprised if David Wilson started the season on PUP, to be quite honest with you. That wouldn't shock me. So I agree. I don't think you can count on David Wilson, and because of that, I do think the Giants will take a running back somewhere between rounds 3 and 5 in this year's draft, you know, to be that 1A to Rashad Jennings in case Wilson doesn't, in fact, get back.
Right. I mean, I'd be honest. I like David Wilson. I think he's an explosive player.
No, me too.
You know, the game we had last year with the return specialist and being able to, you know, get out of the backfield and the speed and everything, and he's young. I mean, I think it would be best for him if he can take this year off. You know, maybe we could get him back, but I don't know. That's, I mean, his future is very much in question. But, hey, I appreciate it, man. You guys all have a good day.
Hey, I appreciate it, Mike. And, Mike, I like that. A little medical stuff with the explosion, what the fusion is. I like it. Good stuff. We'll continue with your calls at 201-939-4513. Montrell's down in Florida. Montrell, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, John? Hello?
Yeah, I'm with you, Montrell. What do you got?
Yeah, I just want to say a few things. Chris Sneak, I keep hearing everyone talking about drafting an offensive lineman, a tackle in the first round. I'm not a fan of it. I don't want a tackle in the first round. I don't like the tackle in the first round. If that happens, do Chris Sneak retire after that? If Giants do draft the tackle, should Chris Sneak retire?
I think Chris Sneak will try to play this year. He'll see how his hips hold up through OTA's contract and training camp. If he's able to play this year, he will play because he doesn't want to retire, being on IR. So, I don't think if the Giants draft an offensive lineman, guard, or tackle, that will, quote-unquote, force Chris Sneak to retire. I think he wants to give it one more honest shot. And quite frankly, if he's healthy enough to play and he can move side to side and he's good, he could help the Giants win football games. So I wouldn't want him to retire if he is, in fact, healthy enough to play. Now, who knows? We might get to the second week of training camp in August, and, Chris Sneak's got two big ice packs on his hips, and he can't take the contact. In that case, yeah, I think he would retire.
Yeah, but see, that's why I'm a fan of drafting the offensive lineman maybe in the third or fourth round, a starting caliber guy that can come in later on. But if that's the case, if we draft the tackle in the first round, he's not going to play. Because if we draft the tackle with that 12th pick, this guy needs to come in and play right away, day one. So the only thing that I can see is we move Pugh to right guard, and this tackle has to play right tackle. And Chris Sneak, he can't play left tackle, and he's not going to play guard because Schwartz is there and he can't play center. So what are we going to do with him if we draft the tackle? That's why I was asking, should he retire? Because I don't think he's going to play.
Well, I mean, Chris Sneak can play one guard spot, and Jeff Schwartz can play the other guard spot.
But if we draft the tackle with the 12th pick, what are we going to do with Pugh then? Don't we move Pugh to the right guard?
Well, all I'm saying is that, look, Chris Sneak took a huge pay cut. He's going to try to play. If he's healthy enough to play, I'm telling you, the Giants are not going to cut him. And then Chris Sneak could either be depth or, quite frankly, sometimes draft picks aren't ready to play right away. And number two, what happens if Will Beattie's leg isn't healthy in time for the start of the regular season? I mean, you have a lot of other, possibilities, maybes and ifs in there that you keep Chris Sneak around, you see who's actually healthy and ready to play at the start of the season, and then you make that decision. If you get to Labor Day and you see that Chris Sneak is your, 10th best offensive lineman, 11th best offensive lineman, then yeah, maybe you decide it's, time to cut him loose. But until you get to that point, I don't think you make a call this early in the game on a guy like Sneak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, trust me, I want him to stay. I'm a big fan of Sneak. I want him to stay. He's a Pro Bowl player. That's why I don't want us to draft the offensive lineman in the first round, because I don't want to put him in that situation. I want to see this guy play. And also with Will Hill, I know we don't have that much information on him, but if the Giants do release Will Hill, do you think that we can we'll probably pick up another safety somewhere in free agency or something? I don't trust Cooper and the guy we bought in from Kansas City. I don't trust those guys behind. And then, and Brown, he's coming off of ACL. So do you think we bring in an extra guy? What do you think?
I mean, I think they'll bring somebody in as a, in the undrafted free agent class. But quite honestly, Cooper Taylor was a draft pick last year. Quentin Demps has started safety in this league before for Philadelphia. They have Stevie Brown, who had 8 picks 2 years ago. They have Onchar Roll. I still, even with Will Hill, if he does in fact get suspended again, none of this is official. The Giants have made no comment on it. This is all speculation. But if he does get suspended for a long period of time, I think you'll add another body just to, compete in training camp. But I don't think you're going to go out there and spend big money on a starting caliber safety. I think the Giants are pretty happy with the depth that they have.
Okay, great. Yeah, because I was just thinking about that. Maybe if they don't bring – I was thinking about actually bringing in someone like Ed Reed with a one-year contract. You think that's possible? You just do your 1 year.
I don't think Ed Reed has a whole lot left, to be quite honest with you.
No, not really. Okay. And one more thing.
Yeah.
About the tight end. You think Giants, if Ebron is gone – and 12, and Giants pick up someone like Donald, do you think the Giants will probably be looking into someone maybe like Kellen Winslow Jr. or the other Kellen that played for the Dolphins?
The Giants already signed Kellen Davis, the big tight end. So that's one of the guys they picked up already. Jermichael Finley's a guy that still hasn't been signed anywhere else. I think they'll look at him depending on his injury issue. I don't think Kellen Winslow Jr. would be an option only because of his advanced age and that knee, which, you know, teams have really had to manage in the past. I think the Giants, one way or the other, will come away with the safety in the first 2 days of this draft. So if they don't, I'll deal with it after the fact, but I really think they will pick a safety in the first three rounds.
Okay.
I mean, tight end, excuse me, in the first three rounds.
Okay, then. Thanks, John.
I appreciate the call. Thanks, man. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good to hear from you. What's going on, bud?
Yeah. Hey, John. How you doing?
Doing well. How about you, Len?
Good, good. Listen, comment on Chris Snee. I said this the other day to Paul. 10 years from now, I'd be very, very happy to drive the Chris Snee bus to Canton. But let me add, John, we need better play at right guard than we got last year.
Yeah.
I mean, we need better play.
And left guard, for that matter.
Well, at left guard, but we're going to get it from Schwartz, I think.
Right.
But, I mean, we need better play. I'm just concentrating on Chris here. And I also want to say, and you probably remember my saying this before, Chris never gets released by the Giants. Never. Maybe he retires. But he's not going to get released. He either retires or he goes on IR for the season and gets his severance pay. He's just that important to this organization for a lot of reasons, and the least of which is the relationship to Tom. I mean, that's down at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
But he's been the kind of player, the loyal player, who's tried to come back through injuries like he's doing now. He's not going to get released, John. The Giants will take care of him. Hey, let me make a prediction on the schedule. Can we have some fun with the schedule, John?
Yeah, please.
Okay, all right, here we go. All right. Okay, we're going to open the season in Washington.
Okay.
4 o'clock Sunday, September the 7th. Mm-hmm. We're going to finish the season in Dallas. Game 16 in Dallas that last weekend. Our home opener will be Thursday night, that first Thursday night game on CBS against Indianapolis. The bye week is week 6. And we'll have a Monday night game against the Seattle Seahawks.
All right, Len, that's interesting.
In Seattle.
All right, here we go. Since I'm on your phone, I have done the schedule 1 through 17, and I will give you mine.
Oh, wow.
All right?
Wow, okay.
I have mine.
Go for it.
This is my guess. Yeah. I'm going to start.
All right.
The Giants have not opened up against the Philadelphia Eagles in quite a while. I have the Giants hosting Philly to start the season.
Okay.
The Giants are not messing around. Week 2, they will host on Sunday Night Football the San Francisco 49ers.
Whoa.
They will then play 2 straight road games against AFC South opponents, the Tennessee Titans and the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right.
I predict an early bye week in week 5.
Okay.
Week 6.
I had six, but that's good.
That's fine. Week 6,
yeah.
They will play their first game against the Washington Redskins at home on a Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
The following week, they will go to St. Louis on Thursday Night Football to take on the Rams.
Oh, man. All right, keep going.
The following Monday night, they will host the Houston Texans. That will be ESPN's one taste of probably Johnny Manziel if they do pick a quarterback there with that first pick.
All right.
Week 9, they will play their first game. They will play at Philadelphia on Sunday Night Football. So I have 3 consecutive primetime games, the Rams, the Texans, and the Eagles, 3 straight weeks.
Well, it's going to work out for the networks because at that point we'll be 7-1.
Week 10, I have the Giants hosting the Indianapolis Colts.
All right.
Week 11, I have them going to Detroit to take on the Lions.
All right.
Week 12, home versus the Arizona Cardinals.
All right, now is that Thanksgiving weekend? 12 must be Thanksgiving.
You know, that's a great question. I did not look that up. Let me see when Thanksgiving weekend is.
No,
I have it here. Hold on. I got my calendar here. Thanksgiving is always what, the 4th Thursday of the month? Is that accurate?
Yeah.
All right, so that would be the 27th. I will double-check that. I'm not sure which day that is.
I was counting, but I may be off by a week.
You might be right. Well, if that's the case, I might have to change my next game. Because week 13, I have them hosting the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Now, the last 6-7 games here are a whopper. So remember, week 10, I had home versus Indy. Week 11 at Detroit. Week 12 versus Arizona. 13 versus Dallas. Week 14 at Washington. Week 15 at Seattle.
Whoa.
That's on Sunday Night Football as well, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Week 16, hosting Atlanta. and they will end the season visiting the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. The Cowboys have been on the road the last two final games. So against division rivals, and
yep.
I guess it's the Giants' turn, and it's really Dallas's turn to be home in that last week. Hey, listen, that's a very interesting schedule. A lot of prime time, John, but that's okay. I mean, that'll be fun. But do you mind if I hold off making my hotel reservations until tomorrow morning?
Yes, please do so. Please hold off, Len.
It'll be fun. Listen, one other thing.
Yeah.
You know, on Will Hill, every organization, regardless of size, John, needs a reclamation project. Now, I mean, what's the downside? What's the downside to keeping this guy on the 53 until week 6 or week 7, whatever it works out, whether it's games or weeks when it comes to that point, after he serves that, you know, if it works out that way? You know, he's a terrific football player. You know, he can be our reclamation project, John. And you just keep him on the 53 until he's ready to play. And we know he's going to make an impact. I like the signing of Demps. I'm sorry that it worked out. We thought we were replacing Ryan Monday. Now we're really replacing Will Hill for a couple of weeks anyway. But I think Demps will do a good job there for a few weeks and hold down the fort. I mean, that's my thinking. I'm probably way in the minority on that, but that's where I come from with Will Hill. Probably the two most dynamic defensive plays, or two of the three, you know, if you count Pierre Paul's interception return for a touchdown against Oakland.
But, yeah.
Geez, the steal in Washington away from Garcon at the end of the game, the interception return. You know, I mean, you know, terrific player. I just think we try to work it out with this guy, do what we can for him. With the offensive coordinator, John, here's what I'm looking for. You're probably going to say you're asking for a lot, but I don't think I am. What I want to see is different play calling and energy out of this team. First possession of the game, first possession of the second half. I want to see a new scheme on third and short. And I want to see a vast improvement in red zone offense. If McAdoo can give me those four things, John, I'll be happy with his first year performance.
Fair enough.
What do you think? You got any comment on that?
No, I think that's fair. I think you want to see Eli get rid of the ball quicker. I think you want to see fewer turnovers. I think that's number one. I think you want to see fewer turnovers. I think that's that to me.
Yeah.
If I was to find one thing, Len, I want to find fewer turnovers. And I think that comes down to
yeah.
Eli getting rid of the ball quicker, too, and protecting him. Because I think those two are obviously interrelated a lot. But
yeah.
Number one, you got to cut down these turnovers. Number two, I think you need a more consistent running game. I think that's a big part of it, too.
Yeah, well, we're gonna try to get that. I mean, that as you said earlier in the show, and you said many times before, I mean, that's what Tom does. I mean, he wants to run the ball. He wants it to be positive stuff. He doesn't want to run just for the sake of running. I mean, he's not going to get to the fourth quarter and count, oh, look, we got 35 pass plays and only 25 running plays. Let's run 10 times to even it out. He just wants productivity out of that run game, and you know, to keep the other team honest on defense. And I think we'll move in that direction with, you know, better offensive line play, you know, with Jennings and, you know, hopefully Wilson. I think pup list is probably a foregone conclusion for this year, you know, at least for the first 6 or 7 weeks, and then we see where he is after that. But, listen, kudos to the guy for getting the operation done so quickly and not hanging around and saying time will make this better. I give the guy credit for that. I think he wants to play football, and he's going to do whatever he can to get back on that field. And I just give him a lot of credit for getting that terrible operation done as quickly as he got it done and not sitting back and just waiting for, you know, things to have break the right way for him.
Now, Len, I agree, and I want to really encourage people, too, to watch David Wilson's interview from yesterday to see his positive attitude and how much he really wants to play. You can't help but love the kid. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, I think this guy, you know, I followed him a little bit when he was at Tech, and from down here, and he seems like a good kid, and he seems like he's a football player.
Yeah,
and he wants to play football. That's what this kid wants to do, and again, I hope it works out for him, but I give him credit for doing it as quickly as he did, John. Hey, listen, Have a good show. I can't wait for the schedule to come out. And listen, Eric was as great as usual. You know, I've known the guy 20 years. He's just calm, cool, and collected when he gets on there.
Nah, he does a great job.
He makes great sense. Eric Kennedy makes sense, Joe, when you listen to him. And he's been that way. I know this guy's from, you know, sports bar days 20 years ago in Virginia. He makes sense. It's a good interview.
I agree. Thank you,
Len.
Oh, right, good. Bye-bye. You know, Kashawn said she was going to call on Twitter yesterday and set shakes straight. And I hadn't heard from her, and I looked down, and she's the final call of the show. How about that? Kashawn, go to town. What do you got?
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning. How's everything going with you?
Good. I missed half the show, so pardon me if I do repeat some of the
That's
things
okay.
that the callers have said. But, yes, I do have a few things to talk about. First, Will Hill. It's a shame. You know, I was so upset yesterday when I heard the news, and I just don't understand. You know, the Will Hills, the Plaxico Burress, the Michael Vicks. I just don't understand it. I mean, I'm a woman, and I wish sometimes that I was born a man, because guess what I would be doing? You know what I mean? And it's like they just waste that opportunity. And, you know, I understand, you know, get some therapy, you know, use common sense. I just don't understand why they put themselves in this predicament and they think that they're invincible. I just don't get it. And I don't feel sorry for them. It's just a shame that it's just wasted talent.
I hear you.
Okay, so in response to shakes, because there's a little Twitter conversation going on yesterday, yes, I am the campaign manager for Team Ebron. Okay, that's who I want. Okay, that is my boy. I want him. And, you know, to me, I have a vision for this offense. You know, to be honest, I was in love with Jeremy Shockey. I mean, whenever I watched that man play, I used to get goosebumps. I mean, everybody has that player. He did it for me. I mean, he really tickled my fancy. And when he left, I was grief-stricken. Like, I was crying. And I understand he became a little bit of a diva. But I love Shockey. I remember his first game against the Dolphins when he trampled over somebody to score his first touchdown. Like, I love Jeremy Shockey. We have not had a tight end like that in a while. And Eric Ebron, yes, okay, you could develop his blocking. Again, there's question marks with everyone, okay? Now, if we don't get Ebron, I'm fine. I'll take a Troy Nicholas. I just want a tight end that is a consistent red zone threat. And I've been saying this for weeks, so to not sound repetitive, this is what I'm going to do. For all the Giants fans out there, like Shakes and Steve from D.C. and everybody who's talking about Aaron Donald and everything like that, I want you to close your eyes right now, and I want you to visualize, what do you think the Giants, right now, what do you think? What do you want the Giants to average on offense, the points per game? Close your eyes. What do you want them to score points per game? So when you get that number, you take that number and divide it by two. Because right now, that's what the Giants are scoring. Right now on this roster, whatever number you want them to score this year, you take that number divided by two. Now, me, I want the Giants to score anywhere between 28 to 31 points per game. Now, that's not happening right now. So I'm thinking, okay, I don't think we're going to get to 31, but let's say I want 28 points per game. How do we get to 20? Right now, I think we can score 14 points a game. We need some playmakers to give Eli. Now, granted, I am not against taking offensive linemen. I want to draft an offensive lineman. I just don't want to take an offensive lineman in the first round. That's all I'm saying, just not in the first round. The second or third, yes. Now, Giants fans like history. Here's a little bit of history for you. We're always talking about defense wins championships, and that's very true. Defense does win championships, and offense loses them. Offense will lose you a championship. For instance, in 2007, when the mighty Giants held the New England Patriots to 14 points, the defense did its due. The defense held New England to 14 points a game. But if memory serves me correctly, in the fourth quarter, it was 14-10 New England. 14-10 New England. So that means that if the game ended, New England is the Super Bowl champions. However, the Giants had a playmaker, somebody who made a magnificent play for us to score a touchdown. So defense does win championships, and offenses will lose them. Right now, we don't have anybody on this offense that's going to make those type of plays. We need receivers. We need tight ends. Now, granted, I'm a realistic fan, so I've accepted that if Ebron is not there, then yes, if a Troy Nicholas is somebody who can be a consistent red zone target, take him. But please, with the offensive linemen and the defensive tackle. Kevin Gilbride, and lastly, Kevin Gilbride's offense for years. I know we've been the top 10 offense for the past 7 years, but it was very predictable, and it was very boring. It was very boring. I've never coached a day in my life, and I used to watch TV like, yeah, I know they're going to run the ball. Yeah, I know they're going to do the play action. It's just, it was the same thing over and over and over again.
No, but Kishon, why do you think it was boring? I mean, I think the Giants' 2011 offense when they got to the Super Bowl was one of the most exciting, high-powered offense I've ever seen. I thought it was great to watch.
And yes, and you know why, John? Because that year we threw the ball more. We threw the ball more than any other time, I think. It was some crazy stat that year. I remember ESPN saying that. That was like the first year of the Giants. We were throwing. We were not balanced at all. We were not running the ball effectively. Yeah, we had to throw because we had no running game. So, of course, it was very exciting. But a lot of times I remember, and my dad's a Redskins fan, and I would talk to him like, oh, my God. Like, he was like, yeah, Kevin Gilbride. That was one of the most the most popular complaint about Kevin Gilbride was that his offense was predictable. And I don't want that. Like, I want people to fear our offense. I want people to be like, dang, you know, when I play the Giants, we got to score 28 points a game. Well, we're going to lose. Like, we don't have a chance. That's what I want. So I don't want to go back to just run the ball, time of possession, run the ball. I mean, that's just, come on. So that's why I'm advocating for offensive playmakers, because I just want our offense to be dynamic. That's why I love defense. I enjoyed the Super Bowl when Seattle played Denver, because I enjoyed that defense shutting them down. And so, yes, I want the Giants to have a great defense, but I still want us to be able to score when we need to. I don't want us to always have to rely on the fourth quarter or always play from behind. I want us to, you know, let's try doing things differently now. So that's all. So, Shakes, love you. And you kind of lost your credibility because you were all for Hakeem Nicks and you all for Mike Evans, and we're not getting Mike Evans. And I already gave you a readout about Hakeem Nicks, and I proved my point. So I'm not – sometimes I am wrong, but a lot of times I'm not, and I'm telling you I'm right about this, okay? So you kind of lost your credibility with the offense.
Oh,
I'll tell
boy.
You what. You stick with the defense because he's better at defense, and I'll stick with the offense. And that's
you.
All I have for today.
Thank you, Kishon. Appreciate the call.
You're welcome.
Good to hear from you. All right, so now if we have a Big Blue Kickoff Live coaching staff, obviously I would be the head coach. Lance would be the water boy. Datino would be our strength and conditioning coach with all the power walks. And I guess that makes Shakes the defensive coordinator. Kishon could be the offensive coordinator. I'd make Len the general manager. Let's see. What else do I got? I want to give Anthony in Phoenix a job. What could I make him? I could make him our salary cap guy. How about that? Him and Frank in Tampa Bay can split the salary cap duties. I like that. Steve in D.C., he can work with Datino as our strength and conditioning guy. He likes to lift. He's all over that. Man, I'll have to find jobs for everybody. One of these days, I'll actually write this down. I'll have some fun with it. But I think that's a pretty good staff to round out the Big Blue Kickoff Live gang. Everybody, great job. I don't have any guests lined up for the next couple of days, but I'm going to change that. I'm going to get, you know, we're getting to 2 weeks out now. So I'm going to try to get either Rob Rang or Tony Pauline, two of the very good draft experts out there, on one of the next couple of days to try to, you know, come on, talk some draft with us tomorrow morning and Friday morning. And then we'll start rocking and rolling here, folks. I've talked about most of the draft prospects. There's a couple other guys out there, but I think I can rely on our, you know, draft experts to kind of to take care of those guys for us. Everybody, good job on the phones. Good job on Twitter. We'll see you tomorrow morning on Giants.com. We'll see you later.